down in the mix over here. And yeah, we were commenting about trees and finally getting some color a little bit late this year, but some leaf peepers already went home. But let's listen to this version of Autumn Leaves from Eva Cassidy here on WordStream. You'll be hearing Old Winter Song. That is Most of Autumn Leaves from Eva Cassidy, taken from her Live at Blues Alley release. As we watch the autumn leaves, most of them clinging on, but several have come down. You are listening to WordStream here at WFVRLP with your host, Ina Anderson. I'm just here running the controls. Ina.
Thank you, Todd, as always. Well, I'm delighted this time to have a wonderful poet guest, Anne Shivas. Anne, right here with me, was born in the northeast of Scotland, very educated, degrees from Dunfermline College, Edinburgh, the University of London. She lived in Israel for 10 years and qualified as a practitioner of the Alexander Technique in body care. And she did an MFA in poetry from Drew University. So one of Anne's specialties, aside from her own poetry, is Scottish poetry and literature. And for several years, she's taught courses on this at the OSHA program at Dartmouth. Anne published her first poetry collection, Whit Grace, published this year by Word Poetry. These poems, beautiful poems, explore culture, landscape, and identity on the Scottish coast, among the hills and villages outside Jerusalem, and among the hills of Vermont. Anne lives with her husband, sometimes in Scotland, and much of her time in Norwich, Vermont. She's just returned recently. I'm so delighted today to welcome Anne Shivers as my guest on WordStream here at Royalton Community Radio. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you very much, Ina. It's a real pleasure to be here. And yes, you mentioned I've got a new book, a first book, so very exciting. It's Whitgrace, published by Word Poetry Books, and if anyone's interested, there is a Word Poetry have a website, so that would be wordpoetrybooks.com and then /Shivers, if anyone wants more information. And I'm going to read from the book, probably five or six poems. Some of the poems are situated in Vermont, some in Scotland, and some in Israel. And I'm going to begin with a poem called Shine the Kettle Drums that goes back to my childhood in Scotland. My parents were both musicians. My father was an orchestral percussionist, as well as they had a jazz band that rehearsed at home on a Monday night. And there's a reference to kettle drums, which were the early timpani. So it begins with those. It's called shine. Oh, and there's one Scottish word in here. I quite often use my Scottish vocabulary in my poems, and this word, the word is highs, H-I-S-E, and it means kind of an arduous trek. So this is shine the kettle drums. Shine the kettle drums with brasso for half an hour until light blooms on their dun sides. No sin not to finish. They'll be that way for years. Save your days for kick the can. Music of the fish van draws your mother out to the street, spares her highs to the fishmonger. Eating honey fresh from the hive, combs yellow cells on toast, boiled blue eggs from hens the sax player rears. You hear Monday night's jazz playing them sane.
That took you there, yes.
Yeah, great, great imagery there. I like that she got out there in time to save herself the long trip to the fishmonger.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm going to incorporate highs into my vocabulary.
Okay, right. I'll maybe offering you a few more, too. And this next one is a little poem called Advice. A vise will hold wood tight, as you saw. Nail a straight cut down. Seal each package well. Save string and tape, paper for tomorrow. See 360 degrees, not just from a mountaintop, where shale slides under your feet, and learn to surf the hill. Even the keel on a calm run, sails goose-winged, Mara's veil lifted. Did you ever find out how many beans make five? Deal with the inner assassin, or bless the times you tried to keep the peace?
Nice line.
I've got quite a few elegies in my book, and this is an elegy for my grandfather, and this is called Coins Flowed Like Water. After the summer my grandfather died, I became afraid of the cold, certain god who took him away, hid deep in sweet purple lilac, or beneath a yew tree, until tired, I crept back to the house. I knew little of death, but that holiday my father and brother left Gamery, I walked in a vacuum of sucked out air. Our sooty grandpa, magician, in whose hands coins flowed like water between each knuckle, and sponge balls doubled and disappeared, the quiet man who whose favorite book was Huck Finn, learned magic in St. Louis in the 20s, came back to Aberdeen with a shiny top hat, black and white wand, toured the small towns and conjured a rabbit for a future queen. I remember his maroon armchair by a coal fire, the children who sat cross-legged, spellbound, hushed for shows. Ahe Presto, who lit that world, himself disappeared.
Interesting. So your grandfather spent a while in the U.S., you say, in St. Louis area.
Yeah, they were there for at least a year. I think they had planned to settle. But once my grandmother was pregnant with my father, that changed something, I think, in her thinking, and she decided she wanted to go back to Aberdeen.
And he probably didn't resist too much.
Yeah, I guess not.
He had a whole new set of skills. I'm assuming that he learned his magicianship while he was in the States.
Yes, I think he did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And in front of a future queen, pulling a rabbit out.
Yes.
Who would that have been?
That would be the current Queen Elizabeth when she was a very young girl. Because they were based in Aberdeen, he toured the villages of Aberdeenshire. I think he had quite a reputation. He was also a producer in the theatre in Aberdeen. And he must have got an invitation to Balmoral.
Yes.
Okay. Imagine wow. That. Fascinating.
I'm going to read another elegy. This time, this is for my father, and this is called Mill Pond Seas for Andrew. Like the old ones who set up muckle stones, we will make a boat, your body to ferry beyond spirit's gales, with fine strong sails filled to the gunwales with hand drums, mackerel lines, creels and guns, big yellow daffodils, windy day walks on hills, high blue skies, mill pond seas, blue, blue cheese, caviar, crab and kummel, aniseed balls, percussive bells and rattles, picnics on beaches, black and white films of old battles, purring cats, tail wagging dogs, late night whiskies with friends, slow burning logs. Like your Miranda, that was the name of his boat, she'll fare well through North Sea har and fogs. And the word har there is H-A-A-R, and it's a very specific name for the kind of fog that rolls in off the North Sea to the coast.
A pretty dense fog, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Wow, that's a pretty full boat.
Yes. Yes, it's sort of based on that Egyptian idea that you'd want to kind of give your dead all the things they might need in the next life.
Yes. Yeah, and a lot of valuable earthly things, the fishing creels and the guns and, and the critters. And wow, I love those imagery.
What a list.
Thank you. I'm going to read a Vermont poem now, and it's a poem from this time of year. Find it here. This poem celebrates this kind of moment in Vermont when the trees are blazing, and for me it's a time to just draw in their magic and their color. So this is sustenance. Jet trails linger in high skies as I lie on the dock of a pond, listening for plop of fish or purr of dragonfly close to my cheek or bleat of a sheep from its field. Maples and oaks round this lip of pond are tinted ripe as peaches, raspberries. Birches pulse like lemons. Little burn babbles its constant murmur and gurgle. Shoes and socks off, I dip feet and legs in cool dark, turn onto my stomach, stir and sieve water with fingers and hands. I bathe eyes, lids closed, in fall's blaze and incandescent glow.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Sounds like something we need to do this afternoon.
Does indeed. It's even warm enough for those feet in the water. I noticed you used the word burn as well. Mm. And for me from Cumbria, it would be beck.
It's right.
Another one of those local words we mm-hmm. grew up with, mm. as opposed to here, stream.
It would,
stream.
Or brook. Would it be brook here?
Brook, stream.
Those are pretty interchangeable, yeah. I would say. I was, when I heard in the context, it, brook came to my mind right away that's what...
Yes.
Mm. Sounds like a place that might be close to where you live.
It is, yeah. It is a place often visited.
We'll keep it secret.
Yeah, right.
It's just your place.
Right, thank you. One of the things that I did in the course of writing the poems for this book was to begin to draw more and more on my Scots vocabulary, which is now, Scots is recognised as one of the three languages of Scotland. So there's English, there's Gaelic, Scots Gaelic, and now Scots. So this is a translation of a poem. It's a wonderful poem, which the listeners may know, by former poet laureate from Vermont, Galway Connell. So this is his poem, Blackberry Eating, translated into Scots, and that is Brummel Eating. And there are lots of Scots words in here, so I'm not going to be able to key people into those, but I think everyone will get a sense of it. Mm-hmm. And I should mention that I actually sent this poem to Galway Connell after I'd written it, and I got a lovely note back from him saying how much he enjoyed it. He said he actually loved it more than the original, and he had it up on his board. I take it that, you know, so there was new vocabulary to him, and yes. he loved that.
Oh, how delightful. Now that letter will be a keeper, won't it? Yes.
Yes, absolutely. So this is Brummel Eaton. I loo to gae oot at summer's end, atween the sonsay called black brummels, to eat brummels first thing in the morn, the stems gae jagged. I pay the gat fu kennin yon black airt o' brummel makin. And as I ston atween them, pooin the stems to my moo, the saft disdains faw near as magic to my lip, just as words aftimes day, antrin words, like sowens, squish, and squinge, mony lettered, ain syllable junts that I squish, plighter, and squatter in yon still, fiert, cranruch called tongue, o Brummel eaten at summer's end.
Isn't that wonderful?
The glossary of terms might be longer than the poem itself, somehow.
I should say that the book does come with a 2-page Scots glossary at the back.
Yeah, I think I'm going to pick up a copy. Reminds me, so that you just said there were sort of three recognized languages. So that was Scots.
Mm-hmm.
That
you were, yes.
Because I, not recently, but when I used to watch a bit of footy from the UK, and a lot of the coaches in the Premiership are Scottish. And one in particular, in fact, I think he had a brief stint on the Scottish national team, and his name is Gordon Strachan. Mm. You've heard of Gordon.
Yeah, he is actually the current manager.
He still is.
He's still the manager of Scotland.
Yeah. Did I hear that did they make the World Cup?
No, unfortunately, just this past weekend they drew, and they have not made it through.
Oh, so close. I understand Wales went down yesterday. Ireland is in, though.
Right.
Heartbreaking. But when listening to him being interviewed, some of those words and others came out, and you were just, it was great to listen to, but you only, at least as an American English speaker, understood about 10% of what he was saying.
Right.
Yes. But riveted to the interview. Anyway, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. It's a beautiful language.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you.
And let's remember Scots. A lot of Americans think the word is Scotch. That's just the drink.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, definitely an educational experience today.
I'm going to read a poem now from my days in Israel. And again, there's a couple of Scots words, which I think I've used each of them already today. There's the word muckle, which means big or huge, something great. And the word, it's pronounced gay or guy. It's spelt G-E-Y. And it means very. So this is The Masks, Jerusalem 1991. In taut days before war, all tourists gone, Dead Sea Road deserted, bar armored cars, we make a sealed room, tape plastic bags over windows. Inside we ready towels, water to create a gas excluder for the door gap, to keep out poison gas, mustard gas. We add snacks, stacked tins of fruit, beans, Israeli champagne. Downtown we fill forms, paperwork for foreigners to pick up masks in a muckle warehouse. A guy lying wait for plain brown boxes and a mask near identical to the black rubber horse head long kept by my grandmother in a wooden chest. We take the masks when we go out.
Scary times. Or maybe they weren't scary, but certainly a lot of precautions.
Yeah, I think they were quite scary times. It was before the first Gulf War, and it was assumed that if when the Americans went into Kuwait, that the Iraqis would bomb Israel. They had pretty much promised to do that, and there was a date. So it was one of these strange things, and in addition to masks, showers went up around the hospitals outside so that they, if there was some kind of a gas attack, they could shower lots of people quickly. In fact, Israel, you know, there were Scud missiles came over to Israel, but there was no gas.
Early 90s.
Did you mention earlier, did I miss it, what drew you to live in Israel for that period of time? Was that?
My husband's a doctor, and he had been offered a job in the late 80s in Jerusalem, and we had met before then. So once we were married, that's where I went to live.
Wow. Start off your married life in Israel.
Yeah. That's a big change from Scotland.
I'll bet.
Yeah. So here's another poem. This goes back to Scotland. The title of this is No Marked Path, and it has an epigraph from a Scottish poet, Norman McCaig. The epigraph is, "My true self, my aimless wanderer." And one of the things that I like about this poem is that I recently discovered a Palestinian concept, and that Palestinian concept is called Sarhar. And it means to go on a sarha was to roam freely or walk without restraint. So it was a man going on a sarha wanders aimlessly, not restricted by time and place, going where his spirit takes him to nourish his soul and rejuvenate himself. Going on a sarha implies letting go. And that's from a book called Palestinian Walks, Notes on a Vanishing Landscape by Raja Shehadeh, who's a Palestinian lawyer. And I discovered that after I had written this poem, but I think it is essentially the same concept. So this is No Marked Path. I take my mother's strong hand on the stony beach between Crivi and Gamery and lead her between rocks and wobbly stones, a way least hazardous, where she can follow my footsteps as I once followed hers, where hand in hand we collected wee cowrie shells she kept in matchboxes, and I found pretty red-white spotted top shells I loved to death. Here, where I first became sure-footed, running, leaping, laughing over rocks, a girl goat. Now I scan the mix of stone, rock, and broken shell for pottery shards. Edges softened from years of tidal tumbling. Not searching for anything particular, not on any marked path, but knowing the shards that are mine to pocket. Minding and hand and foot and eye and heart, the trust in my true self, my mother's gift.
leading who, who's helping, supporting who. And don't we not do enough of that free moving around, walking these days?
We go out sometimes, my partner and I, on a bike ride or a ski, and she's very good with maps and old trails and things like that. But there are often times when we venture into places unknown, and we know that. We know that, well, if we get lost and we go far enough one way, we're going to be all right. We've got a compass. We'll end up on some road and be able to come back. So I guess a bit of a Sharha there.
Yes.
But we make a point when we think we're going to go on a trip like that, we don't invite anybody else because we don't think that would be too considerate. Well, if they said, are we lost? Oh, yeah, but that's okay. I'm not sure the rest. Don't worry.
Don't worry. Yes.
All that wander who are not lost. Really.
Yes.
to pull out a cliche.
Yes. but that is it really, isn't it? There's something about that freedom of wandering.
But I think you said in the definition there was something about the time didn't really matter that much. And that, to go back to the, you know, not really happening so much anymore, I think in our sort of fast-paced society, at least here in the States, time is always of the essence. You know, you just don't have time for that. I've got to get there. This is ending. The meeting is starting. You know, this is. But to be able to suspend that for a bit seems like
and
that would
start
nourish.
With the right mindset to do it. It might seem as if you're doing it, but to be in the right place in one's mind to allow that to be really what's happening.
Yes, and that's what's special about the Palestinians actually having a concept of it.
Yes.
That it's really a thing.
What's that word again?
Sarha.
Sarha.
Yes. Sarha. A sarha or a sarhat.
And do you think that goes back pretty far in their cultural history,
I'm sure
that term?
Back very,
way
very,
before
very far.
The troubles of the 19th and 20th century.
Way further back.
Yeah, way further back.
In the context of his book, he was saying how hard that is because with limitations and borders and more checkpoints, that freedom is limited.
Very limited. It's almost like you have to do it in your mind because physically on your territory or your former territory or your disputed territory.
It's just being, and they might go out and it's changed from the last time they had gone out before.
We probably have time for one more, I think.
And how time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, and I've got a little autumn music hit at the very end. I'll just bring that up when the time comes, yeah.
Okay, well, actually, this poem ends with a kind of a reference to music, so maybe that's appropriate. This is called Time Travel, and sometimes I think actually that's what we do with so much of our poetry is to time travel. Step back to a moment. So this is Time Travel. I have come back. Squeak of cast iron gate, pass postbox beneath the lime tree arch, where my eyes lift, follow the bike ramp to the side of steps. My shoulders, hands know the push and grip of steep ascent. A sweep of stone wings, an open river of domestic rock leads to yellow door, mosaic floor, a flood of blackbird song in summer's late light. A girl in tennis white, I enter what was once home to pick up glasses I'll not need until years from now and take a thick book, Mandela's Song. Years before he writes or I discover the rough blue walls of my Calvinist prison or find the need to sing freedom's song, kin song, find the right tone to break walls.
Are you familiar with that line about the Calvinist prison? Are you familiar with the Scottish singer-songwriter Dick Gaulkin?
You know, it's a name I know, but I don't know his music well.
He has a song about Thomas Muir, or is it Thomas Muir? I get them mixed up. Anyway, it's called Redwood Cathedral, the Scot that went out to the western part of this country, and talks about his Calvinist upbringing and his rather dictatorial father. And I don't know, that image came. Yeah. Maybe the fact that you said that this had a musical connection.
That's John Muir.
John Muir.
John Muir, right. Who was born not very far from where I've been living the last 3.5 years in Scotland. He was born in Dunmobbar. He was an interesting guy.
Is that near Aberdeen, the place that you've just been living?
No, actually not. It's about 20 miles down the coast from Edinburgh.
From Edinburgh, okay.
Yeah.
Can I ask you one more musical question?
Sure.
But you did spend a lot of time in Aberdeen.
I was born in Aberdeen. Okay. My grandparents were all in Aberdeen. Our holidays were all in that area.
Isn't there a folk club there called the Lemon Tree?
There is.
I'd love to go there someday.
Yeah. Well.
Well, let's turn it back to our host, Ina. It's time to wrap it up.
Just about there.
Yeah,
what
just about
a delightful
there.
Guest half hour, huh? Anne Chivas and her wonderful book,
Quit Grace.
Grace, which, as she said, you can reach through Word Poetry Press if you'd like a copy. I'm certainly enjoying mine. Thank you so much again, Anne, for coming this morning and sharing your work with us.
Oh,
delightful.
Thank you so much.
Yes, we really appreciate it. Yeah. We've had so many great poets. It's unbelievable each month. Keep up the good work, both of you.
Thank you. You will, Todd.
Okay, that's it for WordStream today on Vermont Independent Perspectives here at WFVR-LP South Royalton. And once again, we want to thank the underwriters of this program, whether it's WordStream 1 week or outdoor recreation or a new sort of literary show that might be creeping onto the airwaves. And those underwriters include the Luna Blue Farms, Dan Line Acres, the Herald of Randolph, and Bale, Building a Local Economy. Coming up next, a show that's pretty new to our airwaves. It's very popular and I think very good. Going to be focusing a little bit on the music of Sean Colvin. It's called Undercurrents Weekend. So keep it tuned here to Free Vermont Radio. And coming up at 2 o'clock, Peter Neary with his great show, One Guitar. And a little bit later today, Duffy gets to be the engineer of the blues train from 5 to 7 and an evening of Grateful Dead music starting at 7 o'clock tonight. Closing the show with Autumn Waltz from Bill Staines. That's it for WordStream. Coming up next,